Well, here we are.
It is time, Simba.
If you understand that reference, you might be about the age where we should be working together. It's possible. But it is now one of 3 times a year that I'm accepting clients for my freedom framework, overcoming food sensitivities and increasing energy without unnecessary restriction. My goal for my one-on-one clients is to take them through frameworks and explore tools for achieving 50, 80, 90% of their goals in just a few months and show them how to continue to heal on their own so they don't need me anymore. Honestly, I think we're doing great one-on-one work here, helping women that would otherwise be falling through the cracks, thinking that they're just aging, that they're just moms, that they just, and it may be true that they just have stress, when really those stress hormones and their other core systems just really need some serious support and some serious love to serve them for years to come without symptoms. So if you'd like to clear inflammation, eczema, food sensitivities, or improve energy and brain clarity, I'd love to chat with you. You can book a call with me at kristabigler.com/FSS, kristabigler.com/FSS, and that link will be in the show notes.
The act of meditation in the first place is actually to just being aware of that. Because a lot of people say, well, I have thoughts, I can't meditate. Everybody has thoughts. Meditation is just being able to notice you're having thoughts and choosing to come back to what anchors you in the present moment.
Stress is the inflammation that robs us of life, energy, and happiness. Our typical solutions for gut health and hormone balance have let a lot of us down. We're over-medicated and underserved. At The Less Stressed Life, we're a community of health-savvy women exploring solutions outside of our traditional Western medicine toolbox and training to raise the bar and change our stories. Each week, our hope is that you leave our sessions inspired to learn, grow, and share these stories to raise the bar in your life and home. Eight years ago, my husband lost his health insurance and I was self-employed. I'd been working in conventional care up to that point in my career, and I was seeing gross mismanagement of the healthcare industry daily. The company I worked for was amazing, but the reasons we were treating the patients were completely preventable, and our small facility created about $1 million per month in healthcare system burden due to these mostly preventable diseases. My nurse friends also shared stories with me of people faking chest pain for an ambulance ride just to get cigarettes. I did not want to be part of this broken model, and it weighed heavily on my heart. While frantically searching for options to my healthcare dilemma, I found Christian Healthcare Ministries, or CHM, which would allow me to submit medical bills for cost sharing and reimbursement. CHM is a member-based nonprofit ministry, and it's shared 100% of eligible medical bills for members since 1981. I've been a CHM member over 8 years, and I love that it provides a healthcare solution for my entire family that's budget-friendly while also sharing the same values that include prevention and healing. I know where my healthcare dollars are going and who they are supporting, and I even have the option for maternity cost sharing. With the money that I've saved being a CHM member over the years, I've also been able to allocate our healthcare dollars where they matter most to my family. If you want to learn more about whether CHM could be a solution for you, there's a link in the show notes for getting more information, or you can go to chministries.org/less-stressed-life. That's chministries.org/less-stressed-life. When you use that link, it really helps them know if you heard the podcast. And I hope that my story is helpful to you in case you are in need of a healthcare solution. All right, today on The Less Stress Life, I have Julie Morin. And I found Julie on Instagram. I thought that her story was not only inspiring, but actually jaw-dropping first, because it was a story you don't always hear so publicly. So I can't wait for her to share it with you. But in 2015, she got suddenly very ill, and she spent the next 4 years in a wheelchair. She is currently 33, and she lives in France. She can tell us about her, if that's where she's born. She was not getting answers from doctors. They didn't know what was wrong with her, and she was given an incorrect diagnosis 2 years later of Lyme disease. The treatment for that made her even more unwell, and she ended up spending 6 months fighting for her life at 1% of her capacity. In 2018, so 3 years later, it was clear she wasn't going to find the answer outside of herself, so she stopped all of her treatments and decided to do whatever she could to help her body heal and recover from within. Changing her lifestyle and attitude, and her body did the rest, which I just find so cool and incredible. So today she's walking and fully recovered. How could you not want to know this story? And especially after you hear how this happened to her, because it could happen to anybody. And that's what we always think. We think that this couldn't happen to us. I'm sure that's exactly what she thought too. So welcome, Julie.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell us your bio. What I just read there doesn't really tell how you got injured or how you got very ill, but it was an antibiotic that did this, right, to you? Yeah. So tell us, unravel the story a little bit for us, please.
Oh my God. It was such a journey. It's really all happened when I was in my 20s, and it happened in three different stages, I would say. The first time was when I was just 20, I think. The second time I was 22, and the third time I was 25. And every time I had those episodes, every time I would just exercise my body or do some sort of sports, and then my body would go into a kind of full body paralysis. It was really scary. And my uncle had ME. In the back of my head, I was like, oh my God, I'm having like a degenerative nervous system disease. And you know how we go crazy when we go on Google and we check all those things and we think we have the worst disease. And I think that really made my state even worse. But then the first time this happened, I didn't know why. And I had 24-hour muscle paralysis. The second time, it went on to 48 hours. And the third time, so when I was 25, it lasted 7 years, the muscle paralysis. So it was actually just getting worse. So as you said in the intro, and thank you for that, I got ill in the beginning of 2015, and I was doing some yoga poses on the floor, and then suddenly my whole body went to paralysis, and I was like, oh my God, what's happening? So of course I got into like such an anxiety attack. I was like, my God, like this is just crazy. So I was rushed to the ER, and then after 2 weeks of checks, they just couldn't find anything. So they told me what they tell everyone when they can't find anything, it must be in your head. So once they told me this, I followed a 2-year psychology treatments with a shrink. And then, of course, it wasn't in my head. So I just didn't really get much of it. I mean, I couldn't walk after these 2 years. And then
Could you walk before that 2 years? Were you still able to walk?
I was skiing 2 weeks before I got rushed to the ER. I was perfectly healthy. So the first two episodes, I completely recovered all my capacities. But then it was just like from one day to the other, I just went from a very healthy 25-year-old to a disabled woman in a wheelchair. And the doctors couldn't find anything. So I just didn't understand. I think I was just looking for answers the whole time. And that was really a part of my journey where I wasn't in an empowered state at that point because I was a victim. I was like, oh my God, this happened to me. I need to find the reason before I even find a solution. So I found a doctor who misdiagnosed me 2 years later with Lyme disease. And then he put me on a treatment of a year and a half of a lot of medicine in there. And since I was misdiagnosed, the treatment didn't fit what my body needed. And then in the span of 3 weeks, I went from, I don't know, 30% of my capacities to, I want to say zero, but like 1%. And that was in 2018. And that was the most difficult 6 months of my life. I was in survival. I was fighting for my life. I was living with my boyfriend back then in Europe, in the Netherlands. And then I had to actually go back to my parents. My dad was freshly retired to stay with him because I needed 24/7 assistance. Couldn't even brush my teeth. Couldn't shower. I was taking one shower a month. It was bad. And I was like 27 then. And I was like, my God, this cannot be happening to me. So I had a phone call with a doctor that was still following up. And then the like conversation on the phone lasted 4 minutes. And he gave me a new list of medicine to take. And I remember vividly that day. I was like, that's it? That's all I'm worth? 4 minutes of your time when my world is completely collapsing and I'm just fighting for every breath that I'm taking? Because the problem that I had is that I didn't have any energy in my body. So any task that required energy, even thinking, was too difficult. And then I think a shift happened that day. I hang up the phone and I saw the 4 minutes on the phone and I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done waiting for somebody else to help me and to come save me. I don't think there's anybody more motivated than me at healing my own body. And then it just dawned on me. I just started realizing. I was like, but wait, we are all born with a power. We're born with it. We have a healing, regenerative power within us. If you cut a piece of your liver, it grows back. If you cut your skin, it heals. We have this ability. We can heal broken bones. And so I started researching a little bit into all this, and I found incredible stories how people use the power of their minds to heal all kinds of stuff. And I started diving into this rabbit hole of researching all this, talking to people, gathering experiences, proofs, modalities that people did to draft my own protocol, because I was on my own, but I wasn't feeling like a victim anymore. I felt empowered with a new knowledge, kind of like a light bulb went on. And I was like, wait, bro, I was born with this power. Let's use it. Let's start trusting my body a little. Because I tried everything else, so I just don't have a lot of options anyway. So that's really when a shift happens.
Yeah. I want to talk all about the healing, but my brain is stuck on how this happened for a second. It wants to understand this a little bit more. So you had these episodes when you did sports, you said. You would go into the full body paralysis and then recover at age 20 and 22. At age 25, you were doing yoga poses, because in our communication, you had this fluoroquinolone, this antibiotic reaction, this also known as ciprofloxacin, or like several other generic names. There's like 60 different versions of fluoroquinolones. I think we skipped that part a little bit. So how did that play into it? Because my brain is like, oh, this feels like a connective tissue disorder.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly, you're so right to ask this. I think because I went 7 years from 2015 till very recently without knowing what happened to me, I went through all the stages, and actually it was just last year and a half that somebody actually connected the dots for me and told me he was a Lyme specialist. And I thought I had Lyme up until like a year and a half ago. And he was like, Julie, everything you're describing is the exact reaction to something known as fluoroquinolone toxicity. Do you know about this? And I was like, what? No, I never heard of this. And I researched everything for 7 years. I thought I did. And I was like, what is this thing? And he was like, well, listen to me carefully. Did you ever take an antibiotic from the family? There's like 8 families of antibiotics, and one of them is fluoroquinolones. Did you ever take an antibiotic from that family? And I was like, well, who remembers the names of the antibiotics they take, right? No one. So I did some research after, and I found out that the 3 episodes that I had in my 20s, a week prior, every single time, I took a fluoroquinolone antibiotic.
This reminds me of the thing that shall not be named from the last 3 years, when everyone said, like, I don't understand why this person got sick and this person didn't get as sick. Well, there is some kind of baseline in our body, right? We're not all exactly the same. We're not always dealing with the exact same cards at the beginning. And so my question is, did you, in retrospect, was there things going on in the body? And that's my question is, like, it feels like a connective tissue condition or something before that. And I could be wrong, but now that you've looked at all this kind of in retrospect, was there things going on in your body, or are there reasons that fluoroquinolone toxicity affects some people more than others?
I think I'm going to answer to your question in 2 ways. I think for sure the worst things that I had signs in my body of things that just showed me that I was living a bit of an imbalanced life. I was stressed. I had digestive issues. So I've always had digestive issues, and I actually found out that it was from food additives. And as soon as I just removed food additives, my digestive issues just cleared. So I think I had kind of an imbalance. But that being said, Cipro, which is like the most sold fluoroquinolone antibiotic, there is a black box warning that comes on the label when you buy the antibiotic. And it says that pretty much this antibiotic can really have very damaging side effects. And ever since I've talked about it on my Instagram, I think I received maybe 2 or 3 messages weekly of somebody telling me they ended up in a wheelchair, like, because they took it, or that their tendon, because there's another one, another friend of Cipro, which is called Levaquin. And if you take Levaquin, your tendons just rupture as you walk. It's the cool thing of Levaquin. Cipro is the muscles, so you just can't use your muscles anymore. Levaquin is your tendons. So I get those weekly messages of people that are like, oh my God, my pharmacist sold me this. My doctor sold me this.
Oh my gosh.
And they, like the FDA, has actually issued a warning. Okay, back in 2008, Pfizer lost a class action lawsuit in the US from victims of fluoroquinolone antibiotics. In 2016, the FDA issued a warning to all doctors worldwide saying that this antibiotic has shown so many damaging side effects that are still misdiagnosed or undiagnosed by doctors. So we actually don't really know the real number. But they still issued that warning in 2016, saying that this antibiotic should not be prescribed anymore for simple infections such as UTIs, which was my case, which is the case of so many young ladies. UTIs are so common now. It should be prescribed only when there's no other option and when it's a case of life and death situation, which means that this medication in the markets, I mean, it's going to be taken down at some point. It's a poison. So I think there was maybe, like, I was maybe balanced in some ways, but I also took poison. So it's just no wonder that it completely affected my mitochondria, so the energy powerhouse of the cells, to the point that I had to just activate this inner power to just make the machine go again. But I went very close to death because I just took something I wasn't supposed to take in the first place.
I am so appalled that you get that many messages a week.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I don't know. I don't think Instagram is the best search engine, right? Yeah. For finding things. So the fact that people find you and send you these messages is incredible and astonishing. And when I first learned of your story, and then in preparation for this episode, I was looking this up, and it is very easy to find. Very easy to find research-based evidence articles on different things that can happen around tendons, around rupturing, having like aneurysms, neuropathy, having retinal detachment, and having GI effects, and having, I mean, it's just like rough.
It's exactly rough. And I think a lot of people are also like cattle, and it can also be given to meat. Or some people can get furoquinolone toxicity by eating meat that is just not organic. So a lot of people just suffer from this chronic fatigue syndrome, and they don't really know what's like, why they're just dragging and they're just not really able to live their life to the fullest. And it always comes down a little bit to this toxicity we're exposed to. So yeah.
I also am intrigued, and I wonder, I'm just so curious, because what bothers me, and I think I'm sure it bothers you, is that there's a lot of labels that we put on people, and people find validation all the time in labels, right? Like, oh, I feel so much better because I have a reason for this, and they're not telling me it's in my head. You did not get that. You did not get, I mean, maybe, I bet, just a guess, I bet at the beginning when you were first incorrectly diagnosed with Lyme, you maybe felt better because you thought someone else was going to heal you, right?
Oh my God, I cried tears of joy.
Right. Because that's what people want. We want a validation. And there's so many diagnoses that are, in my opinion, I mean, it's just a label. And to me, it's like, well, what's the cause of that issue? And so
nobody talks about the cause.
Yeah. I find it really interesting, shocking. But for me, I'm just like, well, this is what the label is, but what's actually causing it? Because what's causing it can have a lot of common denominators, and they can be differences. But I'm a bit surprised that you were not diagnosed with some kind of autoimmune condition. I'm really kind of on the heels of a family friend of ours died this week from a rare autoimmune condition that I don't know the name of, but his muscles stopped working. He could not move, and then he died. So honestly, before I got on this call with you, I didn't think how those could be possibly similar, but it's just interesting because they had said, oh, less than this percent of people have this. So I'm just kind of surprised that you weren't tested to death and come up with a diagnosis. And I just wonder if it was the time, right? Or the differences. Not that I don't think our medical care is necessarily better than medical care you had, but I'm just intrigued, right? That you did not get any answers while you were in a wheelchair, right?
Yeah.
Because when I think of mitochondrial dysfunction, I think of kind of like MS and the other things that affect your mitochondria.
Yeah,
like
I think
that, right?
they have this checklist that they checked at the hospital. But I think because my uncle had MS, they really checked that because of genetic factors. But what's really surprising to me is I was there, and they did, in French we say anamnese, I'm not sure the English word, but it's kind of like when they go back into understanding what you took with which medications and stuff. And I told them, I'm sure I had a UTI like months before. So I'm pretty sure I told them I had a UTI. I don't remember vividly, but they could have just connected the dots in 1 minute. I was like at the hospital. I even saw a room full of 40 students because they thought my case was so interesting. They were like kind of scratching their head, being like, what can it be? Well, just ask me what I took as medications the past month, and then just make the link, open the label, see that there's a huge black box warning saying it's poison. Match the effects. I had all of them. Muscle weakness, hallucinations, even night terrors when I saw things at night. Memory loss. I had all of them. like literally killing, like mitochondria were just super damaged in the body. How can you not make the link? I think because it's just undiagnosed. And the good news is last month in France, huge, like the whole press in the whole country talked about fluoroquinolones for the first time in history. So it's really starting to get out there. I'm telling everyone I meet, I'm telling all the doctors, and they sometimes not being like, okay, I heard this. You're not the first one to come to me with this.
Right.
So we just need to inform or to just spread awareness.
Well, isn't education empowerment? You said it in different words, but as you started to learn that you had other options and that you didn't have to give over the ability to live to someone else, if you had just relied on other people to save you, you might not be here with us today.
Yeah, exactly. And the treatment that the Lyme doctor gave me in 2018 was actually, there was another family of antibiotics and there was also steroids. And if you take steroids and you have a fluoroquinolone toxicity, it's a death cocktail.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I would love to talk about this a little bit from physiology, if you don't mind. So often, people have not well-functioning stress organs, adrenals, and really that boils down to poor mitochondrial function. I mean, really, you cannot go wrong if you support your mitochondrial function, in my opinion, and you cannot go wrong if you support your drainage and detoxification and support that. Those two things are just wonderful for everyone forever. Mitochondria are kind of, they are the life, that's how your cells make energy, right? And so when I think about mitochondrial damage, I often think about adrenal damage. So when you take in steroids, that's cortisone to the body. Cortisone is essential. And it's also, cortisol can be anti-inflammatory, and that's why they give steroids, but they give them long-term to turn off alarm signals in the body. And so when you take in that cortisone, the body reads that as, I must not need to make my own cortisol. So I'm just going to down-regulate everything. And that looks a lot like that very degraded mitochondria situation, degraded adrenal situation. And really, that looks a lot like very poor resilience and just much more severe reactions to things, I would say. Those are the common denominators I see all the time. So it makes a ton of sense that you bring this up. And I think it's a huge problem. I think this is a lot of people. I think this is a lot of people. And people are always a bit angry with maybe doctors about not figuring this out. I think people's doctors are also victims of this. I think they also don't know or realize that their own mitochondria are not in amazing shape, right?
Exactly. This is not something we talked about. I just learned the word mitochondria when I got sick years later and I was like, okay.
Right. Yeah. Something I want to underline that you said was someone else wasn't able to put together my story and you had to tell your story so many times, which I'm sure was exhausting because you had very little capacity. It was hard for someone to put together the pieces. And this is how often the medical model is set up. It's that there's not enough time to put together the pieces for you. So if there's many pieces of advice to take away, we're not even like getting started yet on your story, which we'll go to next, or your healing story. But one thing I think that you can do if you're in a place of not great situation is everyone can write down their own story in bullet points. And I think it becomes more essential the more complicated your story gets and the more people that are involved. Because I would say I have a lot of case reviews of people who have not been served well by other providers. And I'm charged with the task of trying to figure out what is wrong or what was missing or what the gaps are. And so if someone can write down those bullet points of here's what happened, then it makes it easier, not only on you, but someone who's trying to help you. So I just think that's something we all need to do because we're just humans. So we forget things. it's so easy to do.
Yeah. And it's also important to just seek help in the sense of getting somebody else's perspective sometimes because people talk to different people and they hear different stories. We kind of like learn from each other. And then those things are really almost off the books, right? Like doctors are not educated enough yet on some things. They're just learning. There's a massive rise in chronic illness and people just don't know the causes. As you said, a lot of things are just labels. But if you look at all those labels, the cause unknown, the cause unknown, the cause unknown. So it's like, wait.
Unacceptable.
We're so glad we have a label. When I had Lyme disease, I cried tears of joy. Also because I could finally tell people around me, hey, look, a proof. I'm not crazy.
Exactly. You were told you went through psychological treatments for 2 years.
Exactly.
How difficult. What's interesting. So here's a bit of a disparity and a connection. What's interesting is that you went through, I think you said psychological treatments or you saw some kind of psychiatrist or a psychologist. I don't know who you saw for 2 years. And you did not get better. In fact, you got worse. But when you took the power into your own hands and looked at all of the potential for healing, you were also tapping into your brain for healing. So I want to talk about that. So isn't that kind of cool that sometimes it's the approach, right? There's a lot of different approaches. And some of the things that you were doing, people kind of know about them, but there's deeper levels. So I would love to now move into, let's talk about your healing journey. So you kind of started this and then I went back in time. I wanted to understand you a little bit more. But I know you've moved forward, right? So, I mean, you are walking now. So tell us about some of the things, like what were some of the things that you started to discover for modalities for healing?
Right. So it really all started with this realization that if something was broken in me, if there was just a tiny flame that was in me, I could kind of transform that flame into a fire and something kind of like a force, right? So I actually started diving into, as I said, a lot of books, research, healing stories, which a lot of documentaries, I talked to a lot of people. And then sometimes on Instagram now you see people that are like, especially with nutrition and food, they're either like plant-based or keto, or, and then they kind of like always highlight the differences. But my goal then was to highlight all the common denominators with healing stories. And I was like,
oh, I feel that way too.
Right. If I just do that, then it will work for me for sure also, because they all did it and they all heal. So I highlighted a few things and it started, it was like a two-step process. The first step was to change my exterior environments. So like the toxicity I could just reduce from my lifestyle, but also create an environment in which I knew my body could like supercharge. So that went through sleeping routine that was super healthy, just collecting natural sunlight, grounding to get those negative ions to fight inflammation, social contacts, hugs, just being with people.
Movement. Which was probably very difficult.
It was horrible, but I didn't want to hugs.
Yeah.
Just the contact of skin on skin, just it's so beneficial. So I like took it really step by step. I was going at the pace of a turtle. It was so slow. It was so slow. But I had no kids, no work, because I was literally surviving, fighting for my life. So I had to give it a shot, right? I had to try it. What else did I do? Of course, healthy food. So just eating, like giving the best. When we talk about mitochondrial function, we know that the most efficient way to actually improve mitochondrial function is to really giving all the nutrients, the micronutrients and the macronutrients that are as raw, as whole, as unprocessed as we can to actually give the right fuel for our body. So that was like changing the external environment. And I saw progress. I saw progress that actually gave me hope. I wasn't walking still, but I always give this reference because it might help people to understand that I was taking one shower a month because the weight of the water and the weight of my hair was too heavy. And then I remember that as the months went by, one time I was in the shower and was washing my hair and I reached for that bottle, and just the fact of reaching for that bottle, that movement was a little bit easier than the month before. And that's just what I held on to. I think people want always to see very, very fast, rapid progress. Otherwise they just don't know, but we don't know what's happening in our whole body. We have 70 trillion of cells. Mine were healing at their own pace. And if reaching the bottle of shampoo was a little bit easier that time, I was like, yes, I'm on the right path. I'm going to continue going. So I held on to that. It was like my life, I think. So that was the first step. And then the second step, the first step really started being a routine and then in my habits, I started diving into the power of the mind. And that's when things got super interesting. That's when my healing went from turtle pace to so fast. And that's why I'm passionate about talking about this, because it's free, it's within us, it's something we were born with, and it's just super empowering once you understand the keys to really just accessing those states. So I started learning about this through the practice of meditation, just pretty much. I just saw a lot of healing stories. I dove into some research. And then I was like, okay, so I learned about the brain waves and what they do to the body. So right now, as I'm talking to you, we're probably in beta brain waves. But then if you lower your brain waves the same way as when you go to bed at night, you go into alpha. And that's actually this analogy that actually, because I was like, okay, when I go to bed, I know that I'm reaching deep healing state when I reach delta. So how can I actually try to replicate this during the day to fast track my healing? That's actually when I started being interested into those brain waves. So I was like, what if I can do this during the day? Then it's going to be amazing. And that's what meditation allows you to do. So I was like, okay, so if I lower my brain waves with meditation, just there's some techniques, just being in the present moment, just visualizing yourself in the space, you automatically lower your brain waves to alpha. And then if you continue further down that path, you reach theta. And I started just checking a bit the benefits of those methods. And the reason why I checked is because in the first place, my pain was gone when I was in alpha and theta brain state waves. It was gone. It was the best painkiller I could ever wish for. So I started being addicted to getting at that signal. Like, yeah, this is amazing. So I started researching and I was like, oh, this is so interesting. And I saw the all the benefits that it actually can bring. So alpha can bring you more creativity. Theta can actually, it opens the door to the subconscious, to all your programs. And when you're in alpha or theta state, you're just in your parasympathetic nervous system state. You're just in a very healing rest and digest state. And I was like, if I can spend as much time as I can in this state, then it's going to be amazing. And that was really the door that I just opened, and that opened a whole new world for me.
I cannot wait to dive into this more with you, because every time I learn about this, like, I fall over with like, this is insane. It's so crazy. If you remember, I'd love to hear about where you kind of first heard about this. The first time I heard about the different brainwave states, I was taking furious notes, interviewing Dr. Patrick Porter, who owns BrainTap. And so there's different ones you can, but there's all kinds of things you can use to get in different brainwave states. So then this story, and I know you shared about how you got into theta state on your Instagram one day, and this was interesting for me because I recently completed this certification because I really enjoyed it myself. I was tricked into doing this at a retreat one time, and it's just a kind of a trademarked modality, but it's accessible to anyone. And so we have a podcast episode where you can tap into it, but it's called Theta Breathwork. And it's just asking or dropping into theta healing state while doing a very good type of breathwork, right? But there's different. Mm-hmm. So this is my exposure.
I'm interested about this.
I can't wait to talk to you about it, because when I saw you talking about theta healing, I was like, oh, this is very fascinating. Because when I did this, it's one of those things where the most important thing that got you was the experience. You were like, I am not in pain. I'm actually curious, how long did it take you to realize that or to notice that? How long did you have to support your body before you noticed the lack of pain?
It was quite quick, to be honest. It was really quick. I started with the headspace, and I think I just never meditated before. So I was kind of like taken on by his guidance. And I think I just reached a state of super soothness, if I can say this. And it was, I think, within a month.
That makes sense. I do find that pain, when I've done other modalities, takes 3 to 4 weeks to see a difference.
Exactly.
When you say a month, that actually makes a lot of sense, because we all like to know, like, well, how long is that? Is a year too long? Yeah, I think so.
I was actually going to say 3 to 4 weeks when you asked.
Yeah, cool. So that was my first exposure. Then I went to this retreat and did this type of breath work. This is really interesting when I would do it, right? Like, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I know that nervous system work is the only thing that holds my clients back from healing. So I was like, how can I help them or help facilitate this for them in an easy way, right? So I started doing this breathwork stuff. And then I had watched a documentary where, now Joe Dispenza has been on my list of retreats to go to. Like, I'd love to do that with my husband someday. But I didn't know his healing story. His healing story was that he got hit by a bike. Like, he was on a bike race, got hit by a Jeep or something.
I think like a huge thing.
Like something.
A bus. Yeah.
Okay. Something really significant. Something really significant. I think his back was broken. He's laying in a hospital bed, right? Yeah. Incapacitated. And he checks himself out of the hospital after a while, like, I think AMA. And he tries to visualize putting his spine back together. And at first, and he was talking about doing this for hours, and at first he didn't really believe it and it wasn't really working. And something changed and he started believing it. And I was like, oh, I had no idea that was his healing story. I had no idea.
I think he spent 6 hours a day visualizing that spine getting back together, and he was osteopath. So he really knew bones and all the things. So I think his mental image was very, very clear. But then he noticed that his mind was wandering off all the time. So he was coming back, and then he was kind of fighting against himself.
Yeah.
And he made himself a promise. He said, I am not going to get up from my chair. Well, he couldn't, right? I'm just not going to leave that session until I just hit it. And then he just kept doing that. And then he doesn't even have back pain today. He's completely healed. I was volunteered at his retreat in Paris in February. It was amazing.
And I know I saw on your Instagram, you talked about meditating for 4 hours a day when you were in a tough place. And I just wondered how much his story was part of one of your inspirations.
Amazing. It's been like his book, How to Become Supernatural, is actually the book that I read it, I think, 3 times in a row when I got better and I could have my cognitive abilities to read again. He inspired me beyond words, and I'm actually using to this day his technique that he explains to lower brainwaves.
Now, please walk through that, because I think you did that on an Instagram post. And that was the time when I had first, real quick, when I did this certification, I learned that theta healing is a thing. Like, it's a thing that I have never been exposed to in the United States, but my mentor from Brazil said it was very common there. And it's essentially asking God to drop into theta brainwave state, or wanting and desiring to drop into theta brainwave state. That's my takeaway. I could be wrong, but I would love to hear about yours. So how you see the same, remember when you look for common denominators, you just said, I look for common denominators. I am always looking for common denominators. Where do I see the same messaging coming up in success? I'm interested. So please tell us about your experience and process.
Well, I'm very interested to hear and learn about other ways to access theta healing. And this is definitely a vast topic. And I think we're learning from each other and experiencing. So I'm just going to share my take on it, like what I've experienced and how I do this. So for me, as I said, it really comes down to replicating what we do naturally when we go to sleep. And I say this to people when they ask me on Instagram. I say, well, some people just can't do it. I say, you do it every single night because you go from beta to alpha to theta to delta. You do it every single night. So you know how to do it. The challenge is to do this during the day and keeping a certain state of consciousness so that you're aware in some way that you're actually engaging in altered state of consciousness. And then from there, you can actually make a choice. You can stay in that state and then just bask in the wholeness and immensity. Like when you're in that state, it's like you're on drugs. You're so good. You're whole. You kind of make one with the divine, whatever your beliefs are. Or you can actually, because you're kind of like tapping on the door of the subconscious, you can actually start there to reprogram, to start just undoing some beliefs or limiting beliefs that you have about yourself. So it's really cool practice. So the method that I'm doing that I got from Joe Dispenza's book is, so you close your eyes, you use a few minutes to just kind of ground yourself, be in the present moment, focus on your breathing, your belly, just expanding, contracting, just kind of like feeling what's around you. And then if you're familiar with meditation, or even if you're a beginner, you will have a moment where your mind's just like, oh, did I leave the clothes in the washing machine? I have this to pick up. The act of meditation in the first place is actually to just being aware of that. Because a lot of people say, well, I have thoughts, I can't meditate. Everybody has thoughts. Meditation is just being able to notice you're having thoughts and choosing to come back to what anchors you in the present moment. Whether the feeling of the chair underneath you, the air you're breathing, the passage in the nostrils, anything that just anchors you to the present moment. So you do this and you enter alpha. And then as your eyes are closed, you're going to do an exercise that it has been proven to lower brainwaves. And this exercise is, for instance, if I'm holding my fist next to my ear, let's say 20 centimeters away from my ear, and I'm closing my eyes, I'm going to try to visualize that fist with my eyes closed. I'm going to try to visualize the space around it, how my fist looks, kind of the space that my fist occupies. This simple action automatically lowers brain waves. It's been proven by a guy that put 11 electrodes on another brain scan. So as you do this, some people use themselves as the first person, but I like to use myself as if I'm looking at myself from a perspective in the room as a third person. So I see myself and then suddenly everything just material just disappears, because we also know, I mean, Einstein said this, that everything we see, and that's kind of like a brain, it's very hard to comprehend, but everything material that we see is actually made of energy. It's just vibrating at a different vibration. So I try to go subatomic and quantum and then just see the energy in everything. And then everything material just slowly disappears. So I am left myself, my body, meditating in the middle of a very vast, black, infinite space. In front of me, there's an infinity of space. On my right, there's an infinity of space. On my left, the same. And on my back, like behind me, the same. And below me, the same. So I'm kind of like floating in this infinite black space. And at some point, my own body doesn't even exist anymore. So I'm only a consciousness. It's kind of my third eye glowing. There's just that consciousness, that presence, that awareness of being in that state. And I'm telling you, when I'm in that state, you can tell actually because you have some body symptoms, body manifestations, let's say. Yeah. So the more you do it, the more you'll be like, okay, I'm in that state. And you can't really realize that too much. Otherwise, you might get out of it. But you might have more like signs that your parasympathetic nervous system is activated, like more saliva in your mouth. Your hands might get warmer, kind of like because you're breathing, you're more in the exhale. So you're kind of like, it's the Buteyko method, but your hands a little warmer. Your hand is jerking or your leg. So it really shows that you've accessed that state. And also that feeling of absolute wholeness. You're floating into nothingness. Since you don't have a body anymore, you don't have pain anymore. You're distancing yourself from your known reality, your known life, and you're creating something completely new from that space, from the quantum space.
How long did you work on getting into that state, figuring that out? Did you want to give up on it at the beginning?
I think because I immediately saw that it helped with my pain, this gave me so much motivation.
Immediately after a few weeks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I say that because we're impatient humans.
Yeah, I think even though at the beginning I didn't feel the pain relief happening, I think I felt a sense of relief immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
You do this with everyone. You ask them to close their eyes, to take a deep breath, even if it lasts 1 minute. I do not know anyone who's going to say they didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
That state, you know?
Yeah,
so I think that just keeps you going and wanting to dive into more. And I think my goal, like what I was looking for through this practice, really evolved as I went deeper in it.
Well, and the reason I keep kind of asking you about those timelines is one, I'm just naturally curious, but two, that's how I find, I think it's helpful for people to hear also, because I think one session you can feel better, but you need to keep building that. And yeah. I do find that these neuroplasticity exercises, if you do them every day for 3 weeks, you will feel different after.
Oh my God.
That is what I have found to be this reprogramming hotspot, like at
absolutely.
Least a few weeks. You're just confirming it is all.
Yeah, absolutely. It actually, there was one thing, because a lot of people asked me from going from a wheelchair to walking and then even running again. It created like the experience, the intensity of the experience was so painful and so traumatizing that it created such a hard line of code in my subconscious. So first, when I was trying to visualize this and then me walking again, when I was in theta, I encountered some resistance. So I was feeling pain. I was feeling like literally my muscles tensing up. So I kind of broke it down into easier steps, you know? So one of the things that was difficult for me as I started to have to find more mobility was kneeling on the floor. This was really hard for me to do. So I actually tried this exercise. I actually woke up at 4 every morning because Jodie Spencer says that at 4, your pineal gland is in a certain state and you're more receptive to this kind of altered consciousness states. So I woke up at 4 every morning and for 3 weeks, exactly as you said, 3 weeks, I practiced this exercise of visualizing myself kneeling and reprogramming that part of my brain. And after 3 weeks, I could kneel.
Did you almost fall asleep when you were practicing this?
No, I didn't.
Okay, just asking. Because you wake up at 4 and then I would have fallen asleep.
I was so motivated. I was young. I was not even 30.
Yeah.
I had to put in work.
Yeah. What you said there is so valuable because this happens a lot with people with pain. And I had interviewed a back surgeon one time. And he talked about how the pain cycle just becomes this negative neural pathway in the brain. And I think about this all the time because one of the things I'm doing in practice is supporting deficiencies that happen because of stress. Because when you have stress, you dump out a bunch of nutrients and then the enzymes can't happen in the body. And this is the physiological downstream effect of what happens, right? And I believe in all the healing from here. So my point is that I just think pain is such this under-recognized loop. So I really appreciate that you brought that up because as your body feels pain, it's a very negative, continuous loop that it gets all day long.
And you know, it's so funny because it's like we're built this way for survival reasons in the first place. So if you put your hand in the fire and then you burn yourself, this pain you're going to experience is going to create a program in your mind, a line of code that makes you like keeps you away from the fire because it's like, oh no, wait, I remember. So that's kind of like helping you. But I think with our modern lifestyle and our strengths, we just created those associations. But if it works in one way, it can also work in another way. We can do and undo programs by entering theta, by entering the subconscious. And when you understand this, you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, oh my God, I am so powerful.
Oh, this is really so much fun for me. I really appreciate you having this conversation with me. Okay, so it's a few weeks to notice this significant change. Yeah. I really appreciate you talking about how painful it was for you to go from wheelchair to walking, because don't sugarcoat it. Like, it was, it sucked. Tell us the transformation to success. Like, when did you start walking? What was that like for you?
I think when I really started doing this visualization exercises, so I would also put some music that was very empowering and I would visualize myself really having those desired results. And the key to that is also associating that with the emotions you would feel if that would be true. So first you're going to feel like pain or disbelief or like all those limitations we can associate to those feelings. But then as I tried to reprogram this, I was seeing myself and every time crying because I was like, oh my God, I'm walking. And I think from the moment I did this, like literally every day, it was my inner work. Every day I had to do it. I think within 6 to 8 months, I was walking with all the wheelchair. I envisioned in my mind all those. And that was me. I created this in my own brain. Like, I got myself out of it. Nothing exterior helped me. I helped me. And if I could do this, then we can do anything.
So I want to say something that you said. I'm going to read some. These are your words.
Yeah.
When I teach about visualization, I see almost everyone facing this one problem or one key barrier to manifesting their dream life. And that is, they won't go as far as visualization can take if you don't allow yourself to receive. So I want you to explain this, because our brain subconsciously doesn't believe us, right?
Yeah.
It would doubt us.
Yeah. I think if you look at The Matrix, the movie, if you look at all those lines of codes, this is how I see people now. Like, I'm like, you're just a bunch of, like, you're just 70 trillion cells. You're not even matter. You're just energy. And then this is made of a line of codes. And it's like a computer. You just have to just insert a new line of code and you're going to start just acting according to that line of code. So I think what's so important to understand is that we're living our lives. There's our conscious mind and there's our subconscious mind. Our conscious mind is beta brainwaves, is what we're living our life out of our conscious mind, that is just representing 5%. Of the way we live our life. And so when somebody makes a conscious decision with their conscious mind in the day and they say, okay, tomorrow I stop smoking, they're making that decision based on that 5%. But who's running your life? The remaining 95%, that is your subconscious mind. So if you have to make a decision and it's not working, right? All these people are just failing in the night. They're blaming themselves. They're feeling guilt. Well, it's because you have to operate from this 95%. Because that's where the change, the real change, is going to happen. And I think it's not like you can listen to somebody talk, but to really know their beliefs and their limiting beliefs, you have to look at how they act and what they do. And that's going to tell you about their beliefs. And the very difficult thing is to actually be able to voice that belief, because that belief, its home is in your subconscious and you're not really aware of your subconscious as we're talking now. So as you do those exercises that we've mentioned to lowering your brainwaves and really understanding what are your beliefs, then you will really be able to make a change. So I give that example because recently for myself, it was actually at the Joe Dispenza's, and I wasn't even aware of it, but we did this meditation and I was like, wait, I'm not really feeling like I'm worthy to receive. I felt I wasn't worthy to receive. And I wasn't aware of this belief. I was like, wait, that's really how I'm operating? And I saw that I was kind of self-sabotaging me on some things. And I was like, okay, well, I can say I'm not, but my actions are proving otherwise. So I took this belief, worded it out in a positive manner. I am worthy of success. And then went into my meditation practice and blasted this new belief, this new affirmation as much as I could in theta brainwaves, because that's really when you reprogram the mind. And I think that's what a lot of people are just not aware of, is that they operate through all those beliefs. I mean, my mom was visiting last week and we actually talked about her belief and she was like, oh, I didn't know. I had no idea, you know? And she's repeating her affirmation now every morning and every night, because in the morning and in the night, your brainwaves are lower. So it's actually easier to reprogram that mind. So I just find this so fascinating.
Oh, everything you said there is so fascinating. And I just remember this client talking about affirmations on time and how they just did not work for her. And I was like, oh, this is just, it's because it's so easy for our brain not to believe. It's just such a nuance, but a very important nuance, right?
Well, because probably she wasn't doing it in the right brainwaves. If she's in beta, if she's stuck in traffic, super stressed, it's not the moment to reprogram your brain when you're stuck in traffic. There's a reason, like the stress response, we make it really evil, but it's a good response, right? It's healthy. Stress response is healthy. It's there to protect us, but it's not when you just change your life. It's when you survive.
Yeah, right.
You just need to get out of there. To live it.
So cool. Julie, so you are now, you are walking, you are living your beliefs, and you're also giving back. You have an app. I think you felt inspired. Tell us about the app.
You know, when I was sick, I told my boyfriend, who's been an amazing person throughout my journey. He's been such a big, big help in supporting me. I told him, I said, I wish I had something that could kind of guide me through this whole thing because I was feeling very lonely. Everything I explain now, I feel very empowered. But back then, I didn't have a lot of people supporting me. They all thought I was crazy. They all thought, what is she doing? So it was lonely and I kind of felt like I was missing some kind of help. So this whole two-step healing process that I just mentioned, kind of like fixing the exterior, creating an environment, an external environment that supports healing and helps your body supercharge. And then that inner work with the inner environments, with all the brainwaves and stuff. I was like, oh, it would be so cool to create a tool for that. So we actually teamed up with my boyfriend because he saw my transformation. He started applying all of this himself. He's meditating every morning, or he does two meditations every morning. He puts his little hand on his heart and he's like, oh, I feel so grateful. So we created this app called Envol. Envol means, it's a French word that means a bird taking flight. So it's literally like the image of a transformation. And it's an app that really allows you, there's a recharge core. So the recharge core allows you to kind of like create that healing environment, that exterior environment. And then there's a lot of tools for that inner work as well. So a lot of meditations, like pretty much everything I used on my healing journey that I was just trying to get everywhere, we've put it together in one tool. We've created everything with amazing musicians. It's just a really valuable tool that I personally use every single day. It's helping me improve even more every day and discover aspects of my life that I didn't know. So yeah, there's meditations. There's 3D sound journeys that we've actually embedded with the frequency of the earth. That's the Schumann resonance. So that's actually in the Theta healing range. So when you do a 3D sound journey, first of all, the 3D sounds, they go from left and right, and we've recorded them ourselves with the mic. That's amazing. It's, the mic has ears. It's so cool. It actually stimulates your vagus nerve.
So you need to wear headphones when you listen to that.
Yes, you have to. Yeah. And then the 7.83 hertz make it actually super soothing for your nervous system. So after 25 minutes of this audio, you feel like you've had 2 hours of deep sleep.
Is this like binaural beats a little bit?
Yeah,
or no?
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly. So that's one kind of audio category that we have on the app. Then we have solfeggio frequencies. So we work with those with our musician. He actually started creating a software recently, like last month, because I was asking him too many frequencies. And he was like, Julie, I need to just check the harmony and all this. So it's just so much fun. And then we have visualization musics that are, oh, they're so amazing. So you take a walk in nature, you put a visualization music. It's orchestral. It's dynamic. You have the feeling you're the hero of your own movie. And you start just walking super dynamically and just envisioning who you want to be and bring that energy up. So all those tools are really, there's also breath work and positive affirmations. And recently we've just launched an improvement goal. So you can select which goal you have and you have a personalized library of tools behind each goal. So it's pretty much just a healing best friend, kind of a healing guide that you have in your pocket and you can access whenever you need to reduce stress, to have more energy, to sleep better. Kind of like, yeah, the modern lifestyle little digital app.
Yeah. Right. And it's spelled ENVOL.
Yeah.
So you can find it ENVOL.app.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Julie, it took us a while to get here to get to this interview today, but I'm so thankful that you came because I just had so much fun talking to you. And one of the biggest challenges I find in practice is just making this type of accessible healing sexy to my clients that are like me, that are masculine, results focused, etc. And so that's why I ask you these questions about how long it took you and all these things. But really, it's why I wanted to highlight just this beautiful thing I appreciate that we can find so much inspiration from really this insane pain that you experienced that's become joy. And actually, it's so funny on that note that Julie's Instagram is Julie with Joy. So you go Julie with Joy. And the app is ENBOL.
You know, it's actually funny because my Instagram handle before was Julie's Healing.
Yes, I remember.
I changed it to Julie with Joy because I didn't want to stay in the energy of healing. I was like, I am healed. I am already there. I don't need to search anymore. And the switch was also like, words have so much power. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I recall that now. I remember. And I don't remember how I landed on you, but I'm so
amazing.
So glad I did. There's not a lot of people that light up a room when they come into it, but I just feel like a lot of lovely, beautiful joyousness emanating from you. So thank you so much for coming on today. Is there anything else you want people to know before we wrap?
I've really had fun today talking with you, Krista. It was amazing. Thank you for having me. And I think just the main takeaway from this is really that we have so much more power than we think. Really, truly, we're so much more powerful. And I think we're underutilizing our brain, truly. So I think if this can act as a small reminder of how powerful we are, then I think I'm on a good mission, you know?
Yeah, I for sure think so. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Sharing and reviewing this podcast is the best way to help us succeed with our mission to help integrate the best of East and West and empower you to raise the bar on your health story. Just go to reviewthispodcast.com/less-stressed-life. That's reviewthispodcast.com/less-stressed-life. And you'll be taken directly to a page where you can insert your review and hit post.